Wendy Friesen has been a hypnotist for almost 30 years. Probably like you, I've heard of hypnotism before, heard people that have changed things in their lives because of hypnotism. Wait till you hear from Wendy. She's incredible what she's done, from sick people to addicts, and how hypnotism can really, really help so many people. It's really turned me around. Athletes, children, business leaders, financial matters. It's really, really, really impressive. Learn about her journey, what got her there, what she's done with it. What do you need to do when you want to seek out hypnotist or need help? It's not as daunting or frightful as you may think it is. Wendy, she's incredible. Really enjoyed this conversation. Wendy Friesen, a hypnotist. I think you'll enjoy this conversation. Oh, and by the way, she crossed the Atlantic in a sailboat that she purchased as well. You hear that story, which is really, really cool. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hypnotism, how it can benefit you, your friends, your family, your peers. Thanks for listening. Hi, I'm Joey Pins. People ask me, how did I lose 130 pounds? The quick answer is always discipline. I started my business, wasn't paying attention to my health, was eating too much, drinking too much sweets. My daughter was born. Next thing I know, I'm pre-diabetic, I have hypertension. I knew something had to change. Discipline. I, like many of you, have faced many challenges in your career, in your family, in your life, in your faith. How did you attack them? How did you approach them? How did you solve them, hopefully? It all had to have some degree of discipline. I'm also asked, how did you found and start a tech business that lasted over 25 years? Discipline. I was committed to it, enjoyed technology, didn't enjoy some aspects of it, but knew it was necessary. Discipline. Our podcast mission, how do we use discipline to better ourselves and society? Join me, please, as I talk to interesting people and discuss how they use discipline in their family, in their passion, in their careers, and how it helped them. Our podcast vision, growth through learning from others. Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. It'll be light and serious. Join us, please. Thank you for consideration.
Good mic doesn't work, but on most of them it does. So no idea why. Good to meet you.
It's a pleasure to meet you. Where in Colorado are you?
I am in Kona in Hawaii.
Oh, good for you.
Yes.
Very
nice. I moved 11 months ago when the pandemic was getting so bad and I ran away. But this was a really good, safe island for quite a while. And now it's really bad.
Really?
Yeah. So they're shutting everything down again. Yeah,
it's hard to believe. Nice place, it's hard though. To believe. Hypnotism.
Yes, sir.
I know very little about it. I love your videos. I tell you, they go back 12 years, some of them. We were watching you watching you evolve. And I love Mustachio. Was it Mustachio? The friend.
Forgot about that. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you said to be wacky. So what got you into hypnotism?
Well, it was kind of a fluke. I had two tanning salons and the lease was done, and I didn't want to continue working at them or renew the lease because tanning was kind of going away then. Mm. That was in the early 90s. And I just was reading the Sacramento Bee, and I saw in the classifieds a little ad that said hypnotherapy school. It was just a little like two line classified ad. I never read the classifieds anyway. So I called them up. They said it starts tonight. And it's like $3,000. And I said, I have no money. And she said, just come. You can come to 3 classes for free. And I stayed in 6 months, 4 days a week, 4 full days. So, yeah, wow. That's what it was. Really quite a fluke that, I wasn't looking for it. And it landed right in my face.
Fascinating. We all have stories that we've heard people get off smoking and lose weight. And I remember there was a gentleman going around here. I'm in the Northeast during a and it was hitting all the colleges. James Mapes, I believe is what his name was. And he would, you know, bring people on stage. We've all seen these kind of shows with hypnotists and everything. And, you know, what are some of the fears? What are the misconceptions about hypnotism you feel?
Well, people think that it's going to do something to you. It's going to make you do it. And you have to participate in it. So you don't have to believe that it's going to work, but you have to be willing to participate. If someone thinks nothing is going to help me stop smoking, there's no way. I love smoking. Mm. Chances are hypnosis isn't going to work either. But if they've got some desire, we can turn on some of the things in their brain that will trigger them to not want to do, in this case, smoking or eating sugary foods or, you know, getting rid of trauma, helping with horrible habits and even things like OCD and panic attacks, all kinds of things. It's really amazing. I have seen miracles. It's just
really,
yeah. It's really, really something. And so do hypnotherapists all over the world. They create miracles.
It's amazing. But you say it's something that people already want to do and they just kind of need help getting over the line.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I will say there are some people that I have helped achieve something when they didn't think they could do it. Like someone with a medical condition, a woman who had migraines for every Thursday for 2 years. And the doctors tried everything and they were debilitating migraines. She couldn't do anything for the whole day, but every Thursday.
What? Every Thursday?
Yeah.
Same time on Thursday?
I'm not sure what time, but around the same, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Her story was phenomenal. And the migraines ended after that first session that we did together.
Wow.
Yeah. So I got lots of good things that I have experienced with hypnosis.
I see that you're talking about financial help and sleeping help, kids waiting beds, sexual help. I mean, I didn't realize there was such a wide area. What can't it help with?
That's a very good question. I don't know if there's many limits. For instance, breast enlargement with hypnosis has been researched at UCLA and Stanford. They did 12-week studies, and they measure the breasts every week while they're doing, the people, the women are doing hypnosis. And the way they measure them is water displacement. So the woman would have to lean over and dip her boob into water to see how much mass there is. And a really high percentage, like I think it's like 85% of the women increase one or two cup sizes in 12 weeks using hypnosis.
Through hypnotism, they increase breast size.
Yeah. So when you ask what isn't possible, I don't know. We always just have to go ahead and give it a try and find out.
I can't understand the physical body extended it's so hard for me to believe. It's not that hard for me to believe, hard for me to understand. That's incredible. Right.
Well, we're constantly growing new cells. The old cell dies off and it passes its cellular memory onto the new cell. And it passes on that memory that is the same memory onto the new cell. And maybe when we use hypnosis, we're changing the cellular memory so that it's passing on something different to the new cell. Possibly. That's why. Because the changes people experience, like physical changes, they're permanent. They don't go away. So it's not like it's a thing that just lasted for a day, like you have a swollen thumb or something.
That's incredible. But I was,
I had a ring stuck on my finger many years ago. This is when I was pretty new at hypnosis, but it had been stuck for a week and my finger was really swollen and it was getting serious. And I would tug at it every day in ice and oil and everything I could. And I called a jeweler and I said, I need to have this ring cut off my finger. And he says, yeah, come on over. So before I went, I just closed my eyes and I would do what I do with my clients. I imagined going down inside my body and down through my spine, into my arm, and then going all the way down into my hand and my finger. And from inside of my finger, I imagine the swelling going down and the cells receding and the fluid receding and my finger becoming thin enough then, and imagine the ring coming off. But I didn't believe it would work. So this is an interesting case study because I thought, I don't know. I don't think I could do this, but I'll try it anyway. So I'm driving to the jeweler about half hour later, 45 minutes later, and I'm sitting at a red light, and I wasn't even really thinking about whether my hypnosis had worked or not. I just reached down and went like to grab the ring and slid it right off my finger.
Oh my! Had you
after a week?
That's unbelievable. Of
it came right off. I didn't even pull hardly. And I didn't believe it would work.
Had you hypnotized yourself before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was a hypnotist. And so we'd do a lot of self-hypnosis, especially during the training. You do a lot of self-hypnosis.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Wow. And how do you take yourself out of the hypnotism?
Well, you're not like out of control or unable to be in touch with reality when you're in trance. You can either go to sleep and take a nap, or you can just say, okay, now I'm going to count to 10 or 5 or whatever it is. And when I get to 5, I'll be wide awake and refreshed and clear headed. And you just count yourself up because you're not out of it. You're not like you think it is in stage
trance
shows. Right. Yeah. And in stage shows when people are just blah, you know, and they can't.
Yeah. It's amazing to me. And so are there some people that are more susceptible to get it and were hypnotized where others aren't?
Yeah, some people are resistant and some just need a better hypnotherapist to work with because some of them are not very good. And there's your certified hypnotherapists, some of them paid $19.95 for a course online that gave them a certificate, says they're certified. And it takes so much more than that. Even with 6 months of training for me, which was 4 full days a week, like 8-9 hours a day, and then doing practice on other people and stuff. After that, I still felt inadequate. And I went to more trainings, just as much as you can. You just keep going to more and more and more trainings and continuing to make your skills better. So people do need to know that if the hypnotist doesn't have the training you need, you may not get any decent results. And then you'll say, oh, hypnosis didn't work for me.
Hmm. And it was the hypnotist itself. But when you say that you helped a woman get off weekly migraines, I mean, Wendy, that's incredibly rewarding. That's monumental.
Yeah. Oh, and the stories go on and on. Well, in her case, just so people know how it could happen, I had asked her to go back to the very first time she had felt that feeling. And we don't like to use the word, you know, the first time you had a migraine, we don't want to get the brain to start the process. But I just say the first time you felt that feeling. And so she's in the chair with her head back, she's relaxed, and all of a sudden she stops breathing. And she's like, and her head's rocking back and forth because she truly couldn't breathe all of a sudden. She's So I was like, oh, so I said, on the count of 3, when I touch your shoulder, you're going to stay right in that moment, but you can breathe fine. You're going to stay right there in that moment. And I go 1, 2, 3 and touched her shoulder. And she went, and I said, now just relax into that moment in that memory and tell me what's happening right now. And she says, my husband has his hands around my neck and he's trying to kill me and I can't breathe. So we went through that scenario and released the trauma of it. And then I asked her, what day of the week is it? And she said, it's Thursday. She was strangled on a Thursday. And she had no idea before our hypnosis session. Well, I don't mean she had no idea. She consciously didn't remember what day it was, but in our session, after I said that and she came out of the session, she says, oh my gosh, it was. I totally remember. It was a Thursday. After that, no more migraines. None. And these are the things that like hypnotherapists are like, what? How on earth did something that no medical professional could do, no drugs could do, no hospital could do? It's pretty weird. Have you ever been hypnotized? Have you ever had some hypnosis?
I have not. I've been to a couple of, you know, shows, I guess we'll call them, at the university, you know, when I was younger, and we loved it. We always went back, but I remember I had to put my hands together and I think close my eyes. And if you could open up your hands and you weren't hypnotized, and some of my buddies went up and didn't remember a thing. They were,
wow.
I remember my one buddy, this hypnotist brought him back to when he was 4 and he was drawing and everybody could see what he was drawing. And he drew like a kindergartner. You know, it was absolutely incredible. And it's just, I wonder, and you help people with financial matters.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when I got into this business, I was very broke. I was in debt and I just didn't have money, and I was getting really depressed and stuff as well. So I was seeing clients, but not enough to really support myself. And so I did some sessions on why there was a part of me that wanted me to be poor. And that was just making the assumption that because I am stuck and depressed and not making money, maybe there's a part of me that wants it. This is a thing that hypnotherapists use with their clients all the time. We're trying to find the positive intention behind a negative behavior or problem.
A negative intention behind a negative behavior.
Positive intention.
I'm sorry.
That's right.
Positive intention a negative behavior.
Or even an illness problem or back pain or whatever it is. We want to find the positive intention behind that issue. Or even anxiety, which everybody seems to have anxiety now all the time. Mm. There's a positive intention. So the example for me was finding this part. So I close my eyes, relax, and ask, where is the part of me that wants me to be poor? Even though consciously I didn't really believe that I wanted to be poor, because that's stupid. But anyway, I felt it in my belly. It was tight, and I just felt this real kind of tension there. And I asked the part, why do you need me to be poor? And the part said, I need you to be pitiful, which didn't make any sense because I was not pitiful in my eyes. And that wasn't a word I would ever use. And I said, thank you to the part. And I said, even deeper, what do you need? And the part said, I need you to be more pitiful. And that really hurt. I had tears at that moment because it's like, no. And I said, thank you. Why do you need me to be more pitiful? And the part said, because then someone will rescue you. I had no idea that there was any thought in any of my psyche that I was hoping to be rescued, because that's not my thing either. But some, you know, our inner minds are just so weird and nuts and deeper than what we can fathom. So then I continued to work with that part to find another way to get what it needs without needing to be rescued. And then I did some work on going into my future. 1 year in the future, I was making money. I saw the faces of all these beautiful, happy people that were so grateful for my work. And I was holding a book that I'd written that was selling great. And I had made $1 million in sales of my CDs and things. Well, it was cassette tapes back then. That was a long time ago. And then I did some writing to write it down. And when you go into this future timeline, it's really interesting what you'll experience on that future timeline along the way. Like while I was going into that future, there was a big wall that came up, a big, huge stone wall, huge. And I was surprised. Now, of course, I'm in trance, but still, it's like it was real at that time. And I asked the wall, what is this? Why are you here? And the wall wrote on itself, your father. And my father had been a fairly successful entrepreneur for quite most of his life. And I said, what does that mean? And the wall said, if you make more money than your father, he'll be devastated, because he wasn't really fond of women making money. It's a man's world. He grew up in totally a man's world. And so that was a revelation. Wow. I took down the wall, which metaphorically allowed me to release that, understand that, that I didn't need to hold back for him. But 1 year later, my business had sold $1,012,000 of cassettes, and then it was starting to be CDs. I mean, to be able to do that from being just totally in debt and having no resources and no help, and it was bizarre. And then I also had said on that timeline thing, I'd said I opened the door to my beautiful new house, which was pretty tough because I had really bad credit and all the debt and everything. And in the exact week, 1 year later from when I wrote those things down and did that experience, I opened the door to my beautiful brand new house that I bought. And just so many things like that. And my clients that do the abundance work, these things happen for them, and they just happen, just not magically, but, you know, they've put some intention in there and they've done some work as well. They've changed the way that they show up, you know, in all of their areas of life, and miracles.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And how much I talk a lot about discipline. You know, I lost a lot of weight. I've had some tragedies and some difficulties, I should say. And I feel the way out of them has been discipline, just kind of focusing and, driving to what you want. So when you hypnotize somebody and you help them in this area, how much is it you pushing their intentions in the right direction? How much is it their control and what you've done?
Yeah, that is a good question. So a lot of it is me not necessarily pushing it in that direction, but leading them to discover that specifically. So if I were taking you into your future and I say, okay, now I want you just to follow that path to 3 months in the future. And now that you're getting closer, just notice your feet slow down and you stop right there at 3 months in the future. Now notice what you're feeling and notice what the strongest feeling is that you have physically, emotionally, mentally, and notice what's happening all around you. So I've asked you to feel these things, but I said, what is the best feeling, or what do you feel is the most strong? So I'm letting you discover it, but I'm also leading you to what I, you know, more or less want you to do. And I might say, okay, now continue on that path. And as you're continuing now, you're going to notice that there's a wall that comes up. And I do this specifically so that they can find out if there's an obstacle. And then I would say, notice how tall or short that wall is. Notice if it's narrow or wide. Notice what it's made out of. And all of these metaphorically represent how big our obstacle is and how big our subconscious perceives that obstacle to be, and ask that wall why it's there and what it means. Now, some people's walls are not very high. They could just hop over them, and some are just massive. And some are made out of, you know, steel, and some are just a little kind of a bush. But anyway, I would lead you, which it's something that hypnotherapists are not supposed to do. They're not supposed to lead you. So there's kind of a fine line. I would lead you to experience these things, but I wouldn't lead you to say something that I am implanting that isn't your answer or your experience. So saying there's a wall, I led you to imagine a wall. But now it's just finding out what it is that's your wall, if that makes sense.
Very interesting. Is there a hypnotist main organization?
There's a lot of them. Yeah. There's first one I went to back in probably 1995 when I was brand new was one of the few that existed back then. And it was a conference for like 4 days. And it was a bunch of fat old men that smoked cigarettes.
Wait, I'm sorry, you said 95? What year was this?
Yeah, 1995, 28 years ago. A bunch of fat old men. not very many women. No one who was really young. It was, oh God. There were a few brilliant people there that I really honor and admire, but mostly it was really horrible.
thousands of people there or hundreds? Like how big?
There was probably about 700 or 800. Yeah. And that organization is still going, but it's totally a different mindset now because those old men are kind of probably dead. But there's some good organizations and there's a lot of them. I go to London to speak at a conference there that's just awesome and really great people and brilliant minds from all over the world. And some of them, you are there with people who are really generous and sharing their knowledge and helping teach you and me teaching them. So it's a really nice group of people.
And does it fall under a medicine or medical or therapy? Is it partnered with any other like organizations like that?
A little bit. There's medical hypnosis groups. And it's just, there's some of the medical community, they're like, nah, hypnotism, you don't have enough letters after your name. You know, you don't got the PhD and all the XYZs. But there are medical hypnosis organizations, and they're still, I don't think that they're respected more than just any hypnosis organization. But that's been a stickler for a lot of hypnotherapists. And when I was new and I needed to get some clients, I went around to doctor's offices and I'd drop off a little packet for them to give to their patients. And it listed all kinds of conditions that I could help them with. Some of the doctors really liked it and they sent their clients to me or their patients to me. Yeah. And some of them were just like, no way, no. So a lot of my work is in addiction now. It's drug and alcohol addiction. And the work that I do is completely opposite of AA and 12-step and what most of the treatment centers do. So I did a presentation to a treatment center in Southern California. It was a really big one who, because of the way they organized it, they had like 100 people there, each paying $30,000 each for a month. Because typically there's a limit of like 6, but they figured something out. So the director asked me to come into his office and talk to him about hypnotherapy. And he said, you know, our success rate is kind of low. It's only like 5-7%.
Wow.
And we'd like to increase it. And we were thinking maybe hypnotherapy could help us do that. Well, the other part of this is that my oldest son was an addict for many years, and he had already gone to 2 different treatment centers, and then I had just put him in this one, and I just wrote them a check for $33,000. Oh. And Ryan says, our success rate's about 5-7%. And I just wrote them a check, as did 100 other parents that month. And all these treatment centers know this. They all know that they have, those are the percentages. It's a fact. It's been researched. They know. Anyway, so he had me work with about 20 of the people. I did this hypnosis session, taking them into the future when they're no longer an addict and all the things they love about their life and what they're passionate about and how they want that so much more than anything. And that's stuff that you used to do long, long ago. It's not even a thing anymore. The drugs and alcohol, it just is not even, you know, whatever. So now he wanted to implement my program for the whole center. And I met with the staff, and one of the people on the board of directors is the psychiatrist. So everybody on the board, like there's like 8 or 10 people, they're all, wow, this was great. They really loved my presentation. And then the psychiatrist had me come and talk to him privately in his office. He said, there's no way. There's no way. We're not doing this. This is ridiculous.
Wow.
And because I didn't have the maybe education or the formal, like, I don't know, all the stuff that a psychiatrist thinks you should have, but he was not happy with my song and dance.
So what ended up happening? You didn't do anything there. He cut you out.
No. No. I know. And even though the people that I did the one session with, the 20 people, when Ryan brought me back into his office the next day after I did that session with him, he says, what did you do to them? They're all talking about you. They're so happy. They love this. And I said, I only did like, it was 30 minutes long. All I did was take them into their future and da, 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 da. He says, oh no, they're so excited. They feel so good.
Incredible. And that's the most common that you see are addiction. It's such a serious problem in not just in the United States, in the world.
Everywhere. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have an addiction program that some people, when I was in Colorado, they would fly in and stay for 4 days. And we did about 5 hours a day of therapy each day. And they would do great because by the time they're done with their 4 days, they're so solid and they're so certain. And people who don't think they could quit drugs or alcohol, but alcohol seems to be the bigger issue for a lot of people, believe it or not. Its addictive properties are really high, except for opiates are pretty high.
Yeah.
But people who have failed and failed and failed, and they think nothing's going to help, and they will tell me, even if they do the self-guided program, which is just them, you know, going through the workbook, listening to the sessions, say, you know, on the third day, I just forgot to drink. It just didn't matter. It was like, there's beer in my fridge, or there's bottles of wine, there's vodka in the cabinet. I just don't care about it anymore. Isn't that bizarre? It just changes your subconscious reaction to it.
It just seemed to me with the problem that we have specifically with opioids in this country. I mean, it's just ravaged through our cities and our suburbs. And it's just, why wouldn't, is the medical community pushing it away? Is there not a strong enough in Congress? Is there not enough people helping? What can we do?
Good question. Maybe? Yeah. Yeah. Huh. I don't know. I used to do a lot of radio advertising when my business was really building. At the peak, I was spending $80,000 a month on radio advertising. It was national talk radio shows. And I would advertise the Alcohol Freedom Program. Hmm. And my staff would get calls for people saying, this is terrible. What a horrible woman. How can you work for her? AA is the only way. How can she be telling lies like this to people? AA is it. They believe that's the only way. And it has a success rate of 5-7%, which is the same as if you did nothing at all.
Now, AA, I hope I'm wrong, but you have to believe in a higher being with AA. Is it a lot of the, you know, kind of religious push that's there? Are we getting into an ugly area here?
Yeah, they say that you don't have to believe that it's God now. It used to be God.
It's a higher power, right?
Yeah. And they do want you to believe in a higher power. But what if you believed in your own power to make changes in your own mind and experiencing yourself at 6 months or a year in the future? Well, so we'll just talk about Ken. So Ken drank over a case of beer a day for all his adult life. And he said, everyone knows I am just a fat slob drunk. I'm 45 years old. And this was on the phone because I didn't see him in person, but I've always just been a fat slob drunk. I'm nothing else. My friends, everybody knows that. So he says, on about the third or fourth day, I didn't drink. It was really weird because I drink a case of beer a day or more. And he said on the phone, he said, here's the weird thing though. In my future, when you took me a year in my future, I'm an athlete. I'm really a high level athlete. Hmm. And I'm doing like things that is kind of fun, but I'm not an athlete. I'm a fat slob drunk. And I'm not an athlete. Why did that happen? And I said, well, I don't know. Just continue to, you know, do the sessions and just see what else develops. So he starts working out, training, and became an Ironman. And he has competed in multiple Ironman events around the world. Yes. And he's still in touch with me. This is like 20 years later. He's still in touch with me and he's still an Ironman. And that is such a solid example of the failure of AA and 12-step, making you believe that you are diseased forever. You're always going to be fighting the urges. You cannot hang out with normies, which are people who don't drink. And that your community is a bunch of people who have ruined their lives and ruined other people's lives, who are believing they're diseased forever, and that you're always just one drink away from being in the gutter. Or you could become an Iron Man. And he said, even like a month or so after he stopped drinking, he said, I realized I opened the fridge and there's a 6-pack of beer in my fridge. It's been there all this time. I didn't even notice it. Wow. So I opened a beer and I poured it in a glass and I looked at it. And I thought, huh, that's really weird. And it had no effect. It was just like neutralized. And he said, I just poured it out. I didn't drink it. I just poured it out. And then I was in a grocery store in Sacramento and walking down the aisle, and this woman stopped me and she says, oh my God, Wendy, oh, so great to meet you. I used your alcohol freedom program. And the weirdest thing happens in the grocery store when I'm going down the aisle where all the wine and liquor is, I want to dance. I feel so good and so happy that I just want to dance because I don't drink. And what a difference from all the pain and torture of AA.
Right. I could have this wrong, but didn't one of the president's wives start AA? And that's why there's a lot of money there and a lot of lobby. Do I have that right, Ford? Or one of the?
It was started in 1938 by Bill. What's his last name? So that's why it's like Friends of Bill. You'll see signs like on a cruise ship. I saw a sign that said Friends of Bill with an arrow, and that's where you go meet. So that's who started it. Maybe like, I don't know, Eleanor Roosevelt or something made it popular, popular.
I see.
But okay. So 1938, what did we know about how the brain works? Right. What did we know about addiction or medical things? You know, it was the Wild West.
38 was Hitler's rise. We get into the Second World War in 41.
Yeah. And we're still today making people believe that this is the only way you can quit drugs or alcohol.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, you mentioned athletics. Like how, so can hypnotism get my handicap from a 5 to a 0?
Oh my gosh. This golf is my favorite subject.
Really?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I went to a golf course, and on the practice putting green, you know, it has several holes. We took about 20 people, and each of them had 5 balls, and they stood in different positions, but they had to hit all 5 balls into the cup. It was a remote radio show. They brought all this equipment out because back then they had to, you know, lug all the equipment, and it was live on the radio, which makes no sense. They can't watch the golf. But when they hit their 5 balls, I asked everybody to hold up their hand and how many did they get in, and hold up a finger, 1 or 2 or 3 or however many. There were 0s and 1s that they got in. And I said, okay, remember the spot that you were putting from, and everybody come inside and sit down. We did about a 15-minute session on their inner mind knowing everything about the way that ball is going to roll and the speed and even the way the grass, every blade of grass is directing that ball. Your inner mind already knows what it takes to put the ball in the cup, blah, 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 blah. Then take them back out on the putting green. Again, 5 more balls. And these are not professionals or anything. These are just average kind of golfers. 5 more balls and they're hitting them in, and then put up your hand and show us how many balls you got in. And they were like 3s and 4s and 5s now in 15 minutes.
Incredible.
Yeah. It's golf. Cause golfers have so many head trips going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a golfer who did a phone session with me every day after his tournament, cause he was in a big tournament. And that was kind of cool. And then I had a guy that came in at 6:30 in the morning, every morning for like 3 weeks. Whoa. I think we took one day off, but every morning before he went to do his game. His scores improved, his handicap improved. He was happy, happy, happy about his game. He wasn't going around being frustrated. He was really happy.
Can you do sessions over the phone?
Yeah, I don't like to, but I do. Because I can't see what the person's doing. I can't see if they're face is tensing up and they're all of a sudden having what we call an ab reaction, which is there's some trauma that's being revivified. So we don't know for sure. And I can't reach over and touch them if I need to. I say, okay, relax, take a deep breath. Just let go of that and notice what's happening or whatever, you know?
Interesting. But how about over video?
A lot of people are doing that right now with the hypnotherapists doing sessions on video. Better than over the phone. But then again, what happens if your client does have, like, sometimes they just go into a traumatic moment. Even when I say, like the woman who was not breathing, you know, and I say, go back to the very first time you felt that feeling. Well, I did this session with a woman. It was on the radio because I had a weekly radio show that I did. And I, of course, couldn't see her, but she all of a sudden was just sobbing and sobbing. And, you know, it was a little bit difficult to get her to where I want her to be able to talk to me and stuff because I didn't know what was happening. But it was interesting. She had called in because she was a smoker and nothing had worked and not hypnosis or anything. And I said, go back to the very first time when you had a connection with smoking, something about it that just really connected with you. And so as she could then talk to me, she says, well, I'm sitting on my grandpa's lap and I love him so much and he's reading me a book. And I said, what else do you notice? And she said, well, he's smoking and he always smokes. And that smell of the smoke just makes me feel so close to my grandpa. And we went through that maybe 6 or 7 minutes, less than 10 minutes, and disconnected the smoking part of the memories from her experience of loving her grandfather, and continued to ask her inner mind if it could love her grandfather and honor him without the need to smell cigarettes. She quit smoking. That was it. She quit smoking that day. That was the last time. Wow. And she called in the next week and she said, guess what? I don't smoke. And she, wow. Isn't that something?
That's incredible.
Something that connected her to loving her grandpa.
And she never made that connection. Have you ever seen the movie Office Space?
Yeah, yeah.
So he gets hypnotized and never gets taken out of it. Of course, it's a comedy. And for the rest of the movie, he's kind of laid back and doesn't care. And, you know, humor ensues. Yeah. Very interesting. You bought a boat and sailed across the Atlantic 3,000 miles?
Yeah.
Okay, a million questions. Why, when, where, what?
I'm going to send you, I'll send you a copy of the book. And I haven't published the book yet, but it's finished. And in order to save my sanity, I would be in my cabin typing every day about what happened every day because it was wild. I had just always wanted to do that. And
sail the Atlantic. You've always wanted to sail the Atlantic.
Yeah, well, any ocean would be fine, I guess.
I see.
But I'd sailed a bit, but not in a big ocean, really. So the boat was in Croatia. It's a catamaran, really nice one, 38 feet. And I had someone sail it to Spain, to the Canary Islands, because there's a rally each year of about 250 boats. They do a whole bunch of training for a week for you to cross the ocean, inspect your boats and all this stuff, and everybody leaves together. And then after the first 2 or 3 days, you don't see any more boats until everybody's coming back in to St. Lucia. So to get a crew that could help me sail across the Atlantic, I found them on a sailing forum, looked at their background. We did Skype meetings and things. They all seemed very nice. One guy was from Australia. He's my captain. And the other two were a couple that were Dutch. And things went fairly well for most of the trip until the last 6 days. Now in November, they do this rally in November because that's a time of year where they say you can sail a bathtub across the Atlantic. It is the easiest time. You have following seas. Do you sail at all?
I don't.
Oh, you have following seas, meaning that there's waves behind you and the wind is behind you. So you're going downwind most of the way. So the last 6 days were nonstop squalls and oh my God, waves behind us that were so big that they would crash into the cabin of the boat sometimes. But if you're having really big winds and big squalls, what you want to do is take your boat and turn into the wind and sit there.
Hmm.
We couldn't do that because the waves are so big. If we would have even tried, we would have capsized. So now when you're sailing with those kind of waves behind you in a catamaran specifically, the wave picks you up from behind, picks up your boat, and then you surf down the face of the wave. You don't want to do that. That's very bad. Because when you surf down it, the lower hull of the catamaran can dig into the trough of that wave, and you're over, and you can't be rescued out there. There's nothing that can rescue you. So we were scared that we were going to die. Oh, it was horrible. And then at night you couldn't sleep hardly because this went on for 6 days.
How long is the trip typically?
It was 3 weeks for me, and that's about typical. We came in about the middle of the pack. The longest people, they came in on Christmas Day, and they were they were both over 80 years old, and they do this every year in a big, heavy metal boat, a steel boat that's slow and heavy. They do it every year, and they came limping in. Some of the boats came in with broken masts and sails that were ripped and shredded from the squalls. And that is like just the tip of the iceberg of the stories of what happened. I'll send you the PDF of the book. You can
read it. Now, did you hypnotize your crew?
No, they were like, they were so anti-hypnosis. They wouldn't, you know, most people ask me questions and they talk about it and they say, oh yeah, that's really cool. They were like, no, do not want to talk about that. Oh, and I couldn't play music because Ellie, she was half of the Dutch couple. Ellie says, no, we've heard enough music. We don't need to play music. I was like, come on, dance party.
For 3 weeks, you couldn't play music.
Oh, my God. And so then I thought, we'll play cards because I brought some cards.
Sure.
Nope, we don't play games. I said, except for the game that you are playing with me. We don't play games. You don't? Really? Can't play
no
games.
No music, no games. Wine?
The Dutch people are different than us.
Yes. They've got great soccer over there, but yeah,
you gotta spend some time with the Dutch people. And then also after the rally, I was told, don't ever have a couple on your boat. Because they're going to team up. If there's a conflict, they're going to team up together against you. But the greatest, oh my God, there were so many moments. So we were in the doldrums at one point for several days. But anyway, for some reason, oh, I know why. There's this piece of Dyneema, which is a really strong piece of cord that holds the top of the sail up at the top of the mast once it's up there. And I had a new one made from the people before we left so that they would put it on there because the old one was kind of frayed and stuff. But the guys didn't put it up. I thought they did, but they didn't put it up there. So we're sitting in the doldrums. All of a sudden, this huge sail just falls down completely. And now we need to get the thing up at the top, get that back down so we can reattach it. But the thing was, like, why did the Dyneema break? That's stronger than steel. Dyneema is incredibly strong. They said, well, we have the new one here. I said, oh, it's not up there. You did not put the new one on. And the inspector told us, you have to replace the Dyneema. I went and bought a new Dyneema. I gave it to you to put it on. Anyway, so Ellie is strong like ox, and she's going to go up to the top of the mast. It's called a bosun chair that you hook it onto the pulley thing and you pull someone up. So they're hoisting her up there, and about 3/4 of the way up, she said, it's something like, it's beautiful up here. I said, oh, I bet it is. says, no, 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 it's really beautiful up here, or something like that. And I said, oh, I'm sure it is. Well, the boat, even though we're in the doldrums, the boat's still rocking back and forth a little bit. But when you get up that high, it's rocking quite a bit.
Right.
And she's not attached to the mast in any way. She's just in that chair. So she's trying not to start swinging around and die, because it'll smash you into the mast. What she was saying, it's wobbly up here. And I said, but I didn't know that till she got down. But I was saying, oh, I bet it is beautiful. I'm sure you can see forever. And she said, no, 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 it's wobbly. But I couldn't hear wobbly. She very possibly could have died, because the amount of sway that was happening by you, the time you get to the top, if she wasn't hanging on, it would have swung her out and swung her into either the, oh boy, my boat knowledge right now is fading, but into the, all the different pieces of the mast that would have been tough to do anything to stop it. But anyway, she did get up there. She got it, pulled it down. We fixed it. And but that was a very exciting and scary time. But she just keeps saying, it's beautiful up here. I said, yeah.
Incredible, Wendy. Absolutely incredible. So what should we know about hypnotism? What should we know? If there's a few things that we can learn. I only know it from these events I used to go to, and then I hear things. I played golf this morning, and I mentioned to some of my buddies I'm talking to a hypnotist today, and both of them said, my mother-in-law lost weight. And the other one said, somebody else, stop smoke. Everybody's got a story, a great story of success to the hypnotism. Why isn't it more popular?
Oh, well, it is now, because if you're in my community, there's just thousands and thousands of hypnotists everywhere, all over the world, having all these conferences. And it is, but somehow it's just not mainstream that people are hearing about it thinking, oh yeah, that's what I should do. When my business was big before the big recession in 2008, I was doing so much advertising. I enlightened the masses nationwide about hypnotherapy and what it can do. And I did a lot of TV shows and radio shows and things like that. But a lot of people just aren't, it just doesn't come to their mind to think I should use hypnosis. But here's what everybody can do. You are hypnotizing yourself every single day, every minute of the day, by what you imagine, what you visualize, what you say to yourself constantly. And for everybody listening, start noticing what you're saying to yourself. Do you say, oh, my anxiety is so bad. It's just nothing will help. I don't know what I'm going to do. I just can't stand this anymore, but my anxiety is getting worse. Do you tell your friends, I have such a craving for sugar. I'll never be able to stop eating sugar. I'm so addicted to sugar. Well, if you were sitting in my chair and I was going to tell you those things and say, oh, you're so addicted to sugar, you can never stop eating sugar. But you're reinforcing it every time you say those things. Now, sometimes you're not saying them out loud. Sometimes you're repeating them silently. So when you make a mistake, Joe, what do you say to yourself when you screw something up?
When I screw something up, usually it's a kind of a short expletive.
And you say something like, damn it, I'm such an idiot. Why did I do that?
Yeah, damn it, Joe. Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah.
Stupid.
What the hell, Joe? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Not good.
Yeah. Yeah. So what if someone else said that to you every time you screwed up and say, Joe, what an idiot.
Right.
Why can't you just like be smarter?
That's right.
But anyway, that's what we're doing to ourselves. So my first suggestion is for everybody to notice when you're saying something that is not helpful. And if you're a smoker and you say, oh God, I just can't quit smoking. Cigarettes are just a part of my life. I'll never be able to quit. Then gently just stop yourself. Don't go like, oh damn it. Why did I say that? I'm so stupid. Instead, just stop yourself, take a breath and say, that's what I used to believe. And now I know that it's going to get easier every day to stop smoking. Now, what I just said is not a lie, because I'm not telling myself I can stop smoking today, because my mind's not going to believe that, because it has a lot of evidence that that can't happen. What I said is that that used to be true, but now I know it's going to get easier every day. So what if you do that every time that negative thought pops up? Like, I used to have a lot of back pain and my back would go out and I'd have to lie down for like days where I couldn't move. Ah, but there's a lot of emotional content going on in there. And I would tell people, oh yeah, oh my back. When my back goes out, I'm out for days. It's so bad. I can't even move. And sending all that information into my body, believing that it will happen again. You know, it happens. Sometimes I just sit down. I sat on the toilet and my back went out, blah, blah, blah. What if I say that used to be true, but now my back is getting healthier and stronger every day. And I'm paying more attention to the way that I bend over and move. So you're not lying to yourself, but you're changing the conversation. And boy, that stuff, like the stuff you tell yourself and that you believe about your physical body and your conditions and your phobias or fears. Oh, it's so powerful.
Very interesting. And that, and yeah, just persuading yourself. And that, I think that falls in line with discipline too. I was once very, very heavy. I think I mentioned that my daughter was born. I was pre-diabetic. I kind of come to Jesus moment. I lost a lot of weight. I ate correctly. I did a bunch of triathlons and it was just exactly that. I had to kind of come back to it. And now I do a lot of intermittent fasting where, you know, your body is telling you that you're hungry, but you're not, because it's panic that it's not going to get food. And so you just say, no, I'm better than this. I'm not listening. You know, so that's very interesting, Wendy. So kind of change that narrative into positive direction just to yourself is very fascinating and simple.
Yeah. What did you say to yourself when you had that come to Jesus moment where you knew you were going to take the weight off? What was your conversation at that time?
I'm not going to see my daughter grow up.
Okay.
Because my daughter was just born.
Yeah.
And so that was it. So, I mean, I had always been thin, but I started a business in the 90s and I was 14 hours a day and I was eating pizza and drinking soda and, you know, and next thing you know, I'm 340 pounds, you know? So, so that came to that moment and I had an appointment with the doctor and I weighed myself, said, who is this person? You know? And, yeah. And that was the end of that. So, but I guess I kind of did what you said. I said, if I don't change things, I'm not going to see my daughter, and that's not acceptable.
So you had something that was really, really important to you and powerful and compelling that was more important now than the crappy food you were eating. Mm.
That's true.
And it meant more to you. You know, and interestingly, so you changed your belief about your relationship with food and about self-control and, you know, that you don't even know this person that you are now. In thinking about Ken and his alcohol problem, when he went into the future, he found something that was more important to him, even if it was in his imagination, but he found something that was more important than being an alcoholic and a fat slob drunk. So you did something that probably included maybe some visions of yourself being healthier or exercising or loving to work out or something that changed the habitual, you know, words and conversations in your head.
Fascinating, yeah. Wendy, you're doing great work. I know a lot more now about hypnotism, and I should encourage others who have problems. So where do we find hypnotists?
Well, they're all over the internet.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them. Yeah. You want to make sure that someone is like a dedicated and well-trained hypnotherapist. You should see many different trainings that they've done. It's not just a certificate, but they are members of several organizations as well. And there are a lot of a lot of sites where you can go and find hypnotists, and you need to just really make sure that they've got a good background. They've been doing it for a while.
And it should be face to face.
I mean, if someone wanted to find a referral, one of the places I like is an organization called hypnothoughts.com. And Hypnothoughts has a directory where you can look at the different, all the different hypnotherapists and their background and everything else.
We were talking about how to find hypnotists, and how can people get in touch with you, Wendy, specifically? I mean, do you recommend face to face?
Say that again.
Do you recommend face to face with hypnotists?
Yes. And doing it over Zoom is good, but doing it in person is a powerful experience. It's so much better because there's so much more we can do. However, I live in Hawaii now, so I know, you know, that's a little bit of a trek, and we got the COVID raging. So Zoom does work. Now, I have a lot of recorded programs. I have hundreds of topics of recorded programs you can do on your own. And then also you can use the recorded sessions and then do the coaching part with me. So we spend about 15 minutes each day talking about what it is you want to achieve and getting things kind of set. And then you're listening to the sessions, and I might say, well, what did you find was a positive intention for your back pain? Or we talk about that on the phone or on Zoom. So wendy.com, and it's wendi.com. Very simple to find me. And there's a lot of free stuff there that you can get started without spending a nickel. And then if you have something that you need help with, you can send me an email or a message, and I can give you some ideas, or I can even refer you to some other hypnotherapists as well.
Even better. I didn't think there was any more 5-letter domains left. You must have bought wendy.com a long time ago. Good for you.
Well, this was in the day when it was really hard to buy a domain name even. Right. My oldest brother was a very early adopter in the whole internet thing, and he just saw that that domain was available and bought it immediately. But that was like 1994, 90, maybe 93. I mean, it was when making a web page was very hard to do. So my 12-year-old nephew, who is the son of that brother, he was 12 years old. He built me a 1-page web page because you had to know how to code. You had to
HTML.
Code. So he built 1 page. And on that page, there was like about 5 little icons that he built that were GIFs. And I had only 5 different topics of programs I'd recorded, cassette tapes. One of them was breast enlargement. And so one of the GIFs was like a side profile of a boob. And he made that boob in 3 little steps in that animated GIF go bigger, 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 bigger.
That's great. That is tremendous.
Because of that boob, I got so much traffic to my site. I was flown to New York for a TV show. I was just going all over because of that boob.
That is so funny.
I mean, poor little old me that's just trying to make, I'm copying my own cassette tapes and putting labels on them. And like the Queen Latifah talk show in New York was having a show about breasts. And so they flew me out there. I get off the plane, and here's a limo driver with a sign with my name on it. Holy shitballs.
That's awesome.
Took me to a suite, go right overlooking Central Park. Wow. Picks me up the next morning, takes me to the show. And there's 400 people in the studio audience, which is very rare for a talk show. Okay, so I think I can talk. I'm going to sit at the chair. She's going to be at the desk, Queen Latifah. And we're going to talk, and I can do that. So now they're getting ready, and I'm backstage, and they're micing me up. And I said, so what am I supposed to talk about? What is it we're going to talk about? They said, oh, you know, you've done this hundreds of times. You know what to do. Well, I thought there was going to be a desk and a chair on the stage with her. So they're saying, okay, go, 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 go. And I go out on stage, and I'm all alone, and there's no one else there. And Latifah is up in the very top row of the audience. And I'm on stage by myself, and all the cameramen are making hand signals, and I have no idea what any of those mean. I'm assuming they're counting down. And then there's some music that plays. And then she says, blah, 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 blah. Her hair's, you know, Wendy, her book, Hypnotize Your Lover. And I, right now, my body is like re-experiencing this trauma.
Wow.
Oh my God. So what am I supposed to do? I mean, they tape it as live, you know, they don't. So I close my eyes. I put my two hands together with my palms open. And I said to myself, oh, this is the fastest hypnosis session ever. So I said to myself, you've done this hundreds of times before. The audience is in the palms of your hand. They are going to love every word you say. And boom, it was thrown over to me. No idea what I'm supposed to do. I know the show's about breasts. They think I've been on TV a whole lot. What? I don't know. I was a nobody. I had never been on TV. So I did that quick little hypnosis thing. And for all everybody listening, you know, no matter what's going on in your life, remember what you say to yourself is so important. And I said, they're going to love every word you say. You've got them in the palm of your hand, whatever it was. But I could have just cried or ran off stage or something because I didn't know what to do. So I started, and the video of this is still on YouTube. And I'm amazed. I put myself in a state of mind where I was that person that had already done this hundreds of times, that I knew exactly what to do. And I started talking about breasts and the research from Stanford and UCLA and all this, and you know, talked about how it's possible that we can do it. And I moved around on the stage really well. And then I know they had said they wanted me to bring some volunteers on stage to do a little hypnosis thing. And I'd never done that on stage with anybody. And I did, and it went pretty well. And they kept me up there for half an hour.
Wow.
Wow. On my own with no preparation and no idea what I was going to do. And it really, it turned out very, very good. It was good. Oh, but oh my God, just remembering that and talking about it, it's making my heart pound.
Has technology helped hypnotism at all?
Yeah, it has a lot. Because when I was trying to, you know, trying to make programs for people to buy cassette tapes, you know, that's pretty clunky. Right. But now technology makes it so anyone can, you know, make their voice sound better and add musical backgrounds and duplicate their stuff and put it out there, you know, as MP3s and everything else. So it has helped a lot. Yeah, for sure. And extending our reach. Although I kind of liked it when I was like the only one that was doing any publicity, really, and the advertising and things. That was kind of nice. But
not anymore.
But now it's a crowded field. It's, yeah.
It is. And out of the crowded field, what percent are really good?
I'll go with 10%.
Wow.
Yeah. See, like, here's the thing. I'm on these Facebook groups that are for hypnotherapists, and they're for professional hypnotherapists. And then someone says, I have a client coming in tomorrow who has anxiety. What should I do for them? And I'm thinking, geez, this person doesn't have much training. You didn't learn that these are the procedures you use for these types of things. And they're flat out asking people to tell them what to do with this client who's coming in tomorrow.
Wow.
And a lot of them do that. I didn't know, like a 7-year-old boy comes in because he wets the bed. And I have this client now. I have no idea how to help a kid quit wetting the bed. But I did some research beforehand, and I had two really great hypnotherapists who are legends in the field who would help me with anything. And I would call them and talk to them one-on-one and say, what do I do for this? How do I manage that? And Steve Parkhill used to spend like an hour with me on the phone anytime I wanted just to help me get better and learn. But yeah, so little Grant, who never had a dry day, he wet the bed every night his whole life. Wow. After our session, after the first session, his mom put him on the phone the next morning And he said, she said, Grant wants to talk to you. And he gets on the phone. He says, Wendy, this is the best day of my life. Wow. Because he was dry for the first time. It was so cute. This is the best day of my life.
And what did you do with him? What is bed? I don't think I was a bed wetter. I don't remember.
Yeah. I knew that all of the things, and again, this goes back to what we say to ourselves and how we program ourselves to get the thing we don't want to get. So all the effort about wetting the bed, all the anxiety for him and all the fear of wetting the bed, it was never about staying dry. And his brain wasn't connecting to anything that had anything to do with staying dry. It was only connecting with wetting the bed. I did two things. One was I had him go inside of his body. Imagine he's going down through his body to that place in his body that knows how to stay closed tight all night. So I didn't have to talk about his penis or anything like that.
Right.
But just that place in your body, wherever it is, it needs to stay closed tight all night. Now, maybe there's a little helper, some part of your body that knows how to help you achieve things, and it could watch over that place all night to make sure it stays closed tight all night. That was a part of it. We also, in one of our sessions, discovered that previously his mom had gotten him up in the middle of the night to go pee. And he was telling me, there's a spider on the wall. And it freaked him out. So his brain didn't want him to wake up to go pee again because there was a spider in there. And then in another session, I had him swim with a baby dolphin. And the baby dolphin was learning how to keep the blowhole closed to not let water in. But when the baby dolphin was in the right place, the blowhole could open up and then it closed it tight and no water could go in or out. And so his brain is thinking, oh, that's what I do. Yeah.
It's incredible. That's incredible, Wendy.
It is. It's so miraculous. Oh my gosh. I am so grateful to have been doing this for this many years. And I have saved a lot of lives, changed a lot of lives. But sure, Martha was the best one.
Migraine?
No, it was a different lady. This lady had been unresponsive for 2 years. She was in her house. Her two adult daughters took care of her. She was in a hospital bed. She couldn't move anything except her eyes could blink. That was it. And she breathed on her own. And for 2 years, nothing, everything, all the doctors, everything, couldn't do anything. So I came to her house to do sessions every week. It was on Mondays, and I call it Mondays with Martha, and I loved going there. First day.
She's like in a coma? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yes. Yeah, go ahead and ask questions, no problem. Not a coma. There was no brain damage, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. So the first session I did, and she didn't move her, she could blink, but she didn't move her eyes or anything, but she knew I was there. So the first session, I just told her this story that I wanted her to, because I wanted her to reconnect with her fingers, her legs, do something in the neurology to kind of reconnect. Told her the story of this path down by this little creek and dipping her toes into the creek and the cold water. She could feel it. And then she sat down on a blanket in the nice grassy area. And there's two little girls that came running down the path and sat down with her. And they started making daisy chains with these little tiny flowers because, you know, then your fingers are kind of. But anyway, I told this story in such detail after the session, and her two daughters were in the room with us. They said, how did you know? And I said, know what? She said, that's exactly where mom took us all the time. And that's what we did, was make daisy chains in that creek. It was exactly like you described. I just got chills.
Whoa.
And they said, everything you described, that's where we went. So then next week I come in and Martha raised her eyebrows for the first time in 2 years. Something moved. She raised her eyebrows when I came in. Ha! And I started making, her hands were rigid and her, you couldn't move her joints at all, her legs and arms, and everything was rigid. So I talked about Play-Doh and different colors of Play-Doh. And I touched her hands and her fingers. And I say, this one is blue Play-Doh. This one's red. This one's yellow. And Play-Doh's soft and it moves. And I couldn't move her fingers, but I just would touch them. And then next week I came in and her fingers could move a tiny bit. And I, at one point I got her to the point where she could lift a finger for yes and lift a finger for no. So she's totally in there. She just can't communicate. So now we can ask her questions. I think it was the third week I came in, she smiled.
Wow.
And got her to be able to be sat up because she couldn't be sat up to put her in a wheelchair because her body was just stiff. So we got her to be sat up and she could be in a wheelchair. Now her daughters can take her places because she's been lying there for 2 years. Saw her for several months. And then a few months later, her daughter called and said, she's in the ICU on a breathing tube and they're going to take the tube out later today because she has an infection in her whole body. And they said, there's no hope that she's going to die when they take the tube out. And we were wondering if you can go there and maybe you can help her so she doesn't die. Because they said she won't breathe because she won't remember how to breathe. So I go in there. Oh, and I'm sitting down next to her and said, Martha, you and I know that you know how to breathe. You've always known how to breathe. And the first thing you did when you were born, automatically, instinctually, was you took that big breath. And you know how to breathe. And when they take that tube out, you'll be able to breathe anyway. So I'm doing this. I'm about 10 minutes in and some guy walks in and he's either like a nurse or someone. He walks in, he listens to what I'm doing and he says, she's not going to breathe. That's useless. She's going to die. He didn't whisper it in my ear. He said it totally out loud. And I said, Martha, you and I know that he's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You and I know that you can breathe. Yeah, and he doesn't know. So I continued about a half hour with her and I went home. And later that day, one of the daughters called me and said, they took the tube out and she's breathing. She's breathing on her own. No problems. And she lived, I think, another year or so after that, but with some quality of life.
Yeah,
because they could take her places. Oh my gosh. I mean, to think that, I don't want to say I did that, but I did that.
Right.
You know, no one else had the creativity or I don't know. Like it's comes from positivity. Somewhere else. Comes from some other source that says you can do this.
Have you ever worked with Alzheimer's patients?
Have not. I don't know. And I know there's people who have talked about their hypnosis work with Alzheimer's, and I just don't know if it can be reversed or affected or changed. I don't know.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it'd be nice if there was something that actually has an effect on that. I know that our attitude about getting it or not getting it does have some bearing on it. I actually just saw my neurologist yesterday because I have one copy of the gene for Alzheimer's because my mother died of it. Risk is very low with one copy, but we do know that lifestyle and expectation of what's going to happen is a really big factor. And, you know, obviously it's emotional for me because my mom lived with me. I brought her from Florida to California. She lived with me for a little while, before I put her in an assisted living place. So I think I'm going to be good because like the neurologist said, the lifestyle factors, you're nailing them all. You've got a purpose and you have accomplishments and you have social life and you're eating healthy foods. He says, the food you're eating is more important than anything that I can do for you.
Right.
Yeah. And I do intermittent fasting and keto, which is really good for your brain. So he says, you've got all those things going for you. And he says, you're going to be fine. And then I've been taking these mushrooms from, what's the name of it? But they're called NeuroShroom. And it's all these three mushrooms that research shows that it restores your brain activity and all that. Been taking those for about a month and boy, my brain is just on.
funny you say that. A friend recommended some to me, and I just got them, and I started taking them for the last couple of days. We'll see how it works. But my father, very deep into Alzheimer's now. I mean, he's got no more language left, and it's very, very tough. And he's in Italy, so I can only Skype, and it's even worse. But yeah, it's a terrible thing. But yeah, your food, your well, the three pillars of health are diet, sleep, and exercise, right? I mean, we have to do a combination of those to be healthy.
How are you sleeping? Are you sleeping okay?
Sleep like a baby.
Babies don't sleep very well, Joe.
That's true. I do. How about, do you sleep well?
I do. I sleep pretty good. In my sleep programs, the audio recordings, one of the things I put in there is that if you wake up during the night to go pee or just wake up to roll over, you're going to fall right back asleep when you feel your cheek touch the pillow. So when people say, oh, I have insomnia, I just toss and turn all night and I just can't sleep well. Well, stop saying that to yourself. Right. Program your brain at night when you're falling asleep. Say, I sleep better and better every day. And if I do wake up, the feeling of that my cheek on the pillow just puts me right back to sleep. So some nights I'm awake a little bit, but not terrible.
What can't you do? I mean, I'm having a hard time discerning that. It seems like it. Positive attitude just works for everything.
Kind of. There are limitations, of course. You know, I can't make you grow a second head, which wouldn't be useful anyway.
No. I have to get two hats. That's an inconvenience.
But there's so many things. Like, this guy had horrible road rage and his wife couldn't stand it because every time he came home from his golfing, he was so mad at everybody and he yells at all the people while he's driving and she says he's impossible to be with. Well, I'll try. I'll give it a go. So I did. I worked with him and then I said, on your drive home, when you feel your hands on the steering wheel, that feeling of your hands on the steering wheel, it makes you feel secure and content. And you kind of feel this nice, peaceful feeling going through you, no matter how your golf game was or no matter what transpired. As soon as you feel that, it's okay. And I know there's lots of drivers out there who are assholes and idiots, but they don't bother you. So when you feel that steering wheel, you realize, they're a bunch of idiots, but doesn't bother me. And I just kept working on that. It doesn't bother you. It's just not a thing. Road rage was gone. He comes home, his wife calls me and says, he just is one chill man. He is just okay with things and his golf game, doesn't matter how it went, he's totally fine to be with.
Wow. So, and how many sessions did that take?
That was probably two sessions only. But I don't know, when you ask what can't we do, you know?
Well, we talked about Alzheimer's. I mean, there's something that debilitating.
Yeah, no, well, phantom limb pain, there's just no cure for it, and there's nothing the doctors can do, and they have tried everything.
Unfamiliar.
Huh?
I'm unfamiliar with phantom limb pain.
Oh, so if you lose a limb, a lot of war vets and stuff, they have phantom limb pain all their life, and it's very, very painful. It's extreme. Or my first client with it, she lost her leg in a motorcycle accident. She was only like 20 years old, but the phantom limb pain, it just keeps you awake all the time. It just hurts all the time, like it's real. Wow. So I decided that the reason the brain is still recreating the pain, and the pain feels real in that part of the body that's not even there, which teaches us a lot. I decided that the brain never had a chance to get the message from that damaged part of the body back to the brain to tell it to stop trying to heal that part of the body. So if you cut your finger, how does your brain know to stop trying to heal it? Because something in our consciousness is causing it to, the blood to coagulate, to regrow the skin or to heal a bone. But I thought the brain never learned that it's done. So the brain is ferociously sending this stuff down to that part that is damaged. And so I had her go through the process of healing her leg and also releasing the trauma of that accident, which was horrific. But anyway, healing that leg and sending that information back to the brain. We did several sessions and her phantom limb pain went away, just gone. And then a man that I worked with by phone, he lost his foot due to diabetes, but I asked him to describe the foot to me when it was infected with the diabetes problem. And he said, it's so raw. The skin has just deteriorated. It's oozing. It's all this stuff. And so then I had him go down into his foot, imagining that he's healing the foot from the inside, having the brain do the process it would do to heal that foot and get the skins all nice and, you know, new skin cells are all strong and healthy. Previous to that, he'd been going to a pain clinic for 2 years and he drank a fifth of whiskey every night and took opiates so he could pass out because the pain is real. The pain tells the brain you need to do something right here to heal this part of the body. So we took the information back to his brain and his phantom pain just stopped. It was gone. So that's something that if you talk to doctors, they'll say, no, there's nothing. No, everything's been tried to get rid of phantom limb pain. But it's a good question that you ask because all these people out there that are listening to this podcast, what have you been told that you can't do? We can't fix that. It won't go away. We can't heal it.
That's right. That's right. What have we been told? And maybe it can. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I talked to a woman this week who's, you know, Buddhist, and she believes that meditation and martial arts, you know, and again, I think it's underlyingly the same. It's positivity. It's, you know, training yourself to, you know, focus and go in a particular direction. Yeah. Do you feel there's similarities there?
Absolutely. Because you're exercising your body, training your body, but you're also doing work on your conscious mind and your subconscious mind constantly. Athletes who use hypnosis to increase their skills, there's all kinds of research to show how much more effective you are once you've done hypnosis to improve your skills. How can I make someone run faster when they're already running the fastest they can possibly run, or jump higher, or make more free throws? And the athletes I've worked with, all different athletes, it is amazing. You already are at the top of your game, and yet you're better.
It's amazing. Yeah. A very famous golfer said, you know, of all those top golfers, they say golf is played within 6 inches. And of course, that's the distance between your ears.
Yeah. So here in Hawaii, one of my next projects is to go to all the golf courses and hand them a little promotional thing that is to come in and do workshops in their golf course. And I've done that in Palm Springs. I did it at a PGA course. It was so much fun. And the golfers were so happy. I did it as a group. It was just crazy fun. So that's one of my next things to do, because I love golf. And I'm not a great golfer, because it's not like my passion. But I just love that, everything about that sport. And I love the golfers. But one of my golfers, the guy who came in at 6:30 every morning, one of the sessions we did, he had his best game ever because he was going pro. Wow. And so his handicap was like 0.1 or something. One of the sessions, you know, I had the candles lit in the room. It's all quiet. There's soft music playing. And we talked about God for an hour. Just talked about God. And he went out and had his best game ever.
Did he say he wanted to talk about God?
No, we just got off on a tangent.
Interesting.
Is there a God? Is there not a God? Is it all around us? What are the things that, why did we decide God created this, or do we create it? And just that kind of thing. And it was very profound. And he called afterwards and he said, just had my best game of my life.
Wow. Incredible.
And there's no point to that, but it was really cool.
Yeah. There's a really nice in Kona. There's Poipu Bay is in Kona, correct?
Maybe. I'm not, that one doesn't sound familiar to me, but
Well, a lot of golf course, and then of course Palm Springs, a lot of great golf courses there. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of good golf courses
there. Yeah, yeah. It's an expensive and time consuming sport. I suggest something else. You know, I love it. People hate for me to say that, but I, you know, you think about it at night and my goodness. Yeah. Wendy, thanks so much. This is such a pleasure, such a delight. I know so much more now, and I want to start recommending meditation to people. I mean, the one thing that you said, that a lot of them aren't good. You gotta, well, perhaps we reach out to you, find somebody in their area, go to wendy.com with an I, get a recommendation for somebody in their geography. That would really be the best.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have programs. If you can't find somebody or you just want to try it before you spend like $200 a session, try the recorded programs because there's some really good therapy in them.
I'm looking at it now. Love Your Life Bundle, Alcohol Freedom, Addiction Freedom, Finance Abundance. There's sexual ones, Living Large with Men's Enhancement and Growth. I guess that would go along with breast
yes.
increase.
Yes. One man asked me many, many years ago, can I enlarge my penis? And I said, no, of course not. That's not going to work.
So did he ask out of the corner of his mouth like that?
And it's funny because his name is James Taylor, but he's not that James Taylor.
I see. Yes.
Lots of James. I was like, James Taylor, really?
Sure.
So I made him a cassette tape.
I've seen fire and I've seen rain.
That's right. And then he saw his penis get bigger in 1 month. He was on a business trip for a month away from his wife. He listened to the cassette tape every day. And he said, you know, it's gotten bigger. And it's not just my erection is bigger. It's flaccid. It's like an inch longer flaccid even. So he goes home and he let me know. He says, my wife and I, we had a little trouble getting it in because it is that much bigger.
Fantastic.
I told him it would not work. I told him, I said, I'll make you the tape. I don't really want to talk about your penis, but I will make you the tape. And it's not going to do anything though.
Fascinating. And again, positivity. I'm sure it was, don't tell yourself negative things. Don't be hard on yourself. I guess that's a poor use of terms there, but
program is also about men's self-esteem and their confidence sexually and being a better lover, being more connected. There's a lot of sessions. It's not just about growth, but it's about you being a better man and not feeling all insecure and worried about, you know, things like your size, but just being really connected with your lover.
Remote influence and love of your life. Other ones.
Yeah.
Very, very cool, Wendy. Very
pretty
impressive.
Cool. Yeah, I got a zillion stories that go with every one of my programs.
Do you really?
Nuts. But yeah, it's been fun talking to you too. Good getting
great.
To know you.
Yeah, yes. I hope one day maybe we get to do a face-to-face so we could talk face-to-face instead of over this medium here eventually. We are about 6,000 miles apart from each other. I'm near New York and you're in Kona,
in the East
but
Coast.
You never know where we might come together. Thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, this has been great. Absolutely.
Wendy.com with an I. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you. This has been really, really great. And I'm just proud and pleased to be on your podcast.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening and or viewing Joey Pinn's Discipline Conversations. Please share this episode with one or two of your friends who you think may benefit from the episode. Our website, www.joeypins.com. There you find lots of resources and you could join our mailing list. Please follow us on all our social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Podcast information, the video version of our podcast is on YouTube. Please subscribe. Audio is on all major podcasting platforms. Please follow them. And if you like it, please consider giving 5-star rating. Would really appreciate that. Would you like to financially support the podcast? You can go to our Patreon site. Consider $5, $10, or $20 a month. There's all kind of plans that we have there. There's like a one-time payment. What is this podcast episode worth to you? $25, $50, $100, $500, $1,000, $5,000. You be the judge. You can go to our PayPal account to do that as well. Thank you again for listening or watching Joey Pinn's Discipline Conversations.